This free resource is from the 2013 Spiritual Leadership Conference in Lancaster, California, hosted by Pastor Paul Chapel in the Lancaster Baptist Church. This lesson is on starting new adult Bible fellowships with Tim Christensen. Brother Christensen assists Dr. Chapel with the daily administrative work of the Lancaster Baptist Church and with the oversight of construction on the campus.
Amen. Well, we're here to talk about reaching adults through the Adult Sunday School, especially by starting new classes. I just referred to it as the Adult Sunday School. We call it that sometimes. We call it Adult Bible Fellowships. We've called them Adult Bible Classes. We call them Life Stage Classes. We're just kind of have a split identity, I guess. But we know what we're talking about. We use all those terms interchangeably. I think you probably know what we're talking about. Different church called them different things, growth groups, small groups, whatever you want to call them. Ours meet on Sunday mornings on campus, between the two large worship services. It works well for us. We've had probably 10 different church schedules over the 16 years that I've been here, and we try to keep the folks guessing. And depending on what facilities we had at the time, whether we had a shortage of classroom space or a shortage of parking or a shortage of auditorium space, we have had different schedules. Right now, we have all of our classes, all of our English classes at 10 on Sunday morning, the early worship services at 8:30, the late worship services at 11 o'clock. For a few years, before we built the Revels building and the West Wing, we had very limited Sunday school space, so we had three Sunday school hours. And we had Sunday school going back to back to back and had classes over all three of those hours, worship services during two of those hours. And I believe that when they, in response to Isaiah's preaching, lengthen those cords and strengthen those stakes, so to speak, and follow that analogy of following God's leadership in their nation by preparing for blessing, that was an act of faith. And so what we do when we start new classes is, you know, they could all flop. And we've had classes flop. But when we start a class, we're saying we believe that there are more people in this age bracket that we can reach for the Lord and that God wants us to reach in this community. And so we're going to make a place for them. Someone compared the philosophy of not starting classes and just kind of sticking with what you've got. And I imagine some of the churches represented in this room have one Sunday school class. It's the auditorium class, and that's what you have, and that's fine for now. But you want to start more, otherwise you wouldn't be in this session today. And some churches represented by this group probably have a few Sunday school classes, and some might have more. Some of you might have a singles class and a couples class and a seniors class, something of that nature. And sometimes people wonder about just keeping the existing ones. And I heard an analogy or read an analogy that you can view Sunday school classes in one of two ways. And this kind of goes along with our nautical theme of launch out. And I love boating, grew up boating, a boat now when I can. But when it comes to boating, you can see it one of two ways. You can see your Sunday school class as a houseboat. Now, why do people rent a houseboat? To hang out with the people they love the most, and to identify a fixed number that'll fit on that boat, and to hang out with them and enjoy one another's company. The average Baptist Sunday school class views their class like a houseboat. It's a place where they come once a week to hang out with the people they already know, to spend more time with the people they already know. And the author that I was reading said, we need to not see our classes like houseboats, we need to see our classes like fishing boats. Fishing boats go out to catch more fish. And he said, if you're on a large body of water, if you have the option of adding more fishermen into one or two boats or sending more fishermen out in different parts of the lake in more boats, you're going to always catch more fish with more boats across the lake than you will by concentrating all your fishermen into one or two boats. And that's kind of the philosophy. We believe that instead of having a few Sunday school classes taught by just the pastoral staff and then put all the good soul winners and all the good leaders into those classes and try to get just those classes to get big and keep it with those classes, the alternative that God has seemed to bless here over the years is let people leave those ranks and start more classes and reach more people. So how are we going to do that? First of all, we want to understand the nature of an evangelistic Sunday school. People that view their Sunday school class as a houseboat don't get it. The Sunday school is not to hang out with the folks we know. The Sunday school is to reach the folks we need to reach. And so let me give you real quickly five functions of the Sunday school. I taught an entire session 1 year on these 5 points, I think. But I really want you to understand that as you start classes, this is a 5-point mission description or job description that you can give to the folks that would start those classes. Every class does 5 things. Number one, every class reaches people of a specific age group with the gospel. We're asking every class to reach people of a specific age group with the gospel. So, the cross-training class, which Brother Lester teaches for singles 22 to 25, those folks in that class know, and especially the leader and the leaders of the class know, that their job is to help us reach people in that age group in the Antelope Valley. And they would know that there are thousands of people in that age group in the Antelope Valley. And we need to pray and work toward reaching them. And it's their job to reach those folks in that age group. That doesn't mean they wouldn't witness to someone outside of that age group if they're out soul winning or something of that nature. But they know that their passion and their vision is to reach that age group with the gospel of Christ. Letter B, each class connects new members and meets needs through relationships. Every class connects new members and meets needs through relationships. People are not looking for a friendly church when they come into the doors of your church. They sometimes comment on the fact that it's a friendly church, and that's a good thing, but they're not looking for a friendly church. They're looking for friends, and there's a difference. Lots of people that I'm friendly toward that are not my friends, okay? And so do you. And you're being friendly toward them at this conference this week, and we won't see each other again for 51 weeks because we're not friends per se in that sense. People aren't looking for a friendly group, they're looking for friends. And all of the studies support the idea that if you can connect new members in a class like this, let's take that class I mentioned a minute ago for an example. If a 23-year-old gets invited to this church and attends and maybe walks the aisle for salvation or gets saved on a Tuesday night follow-up visit at their home, what we know is the odds of that person sticking around are really staked in our ministry structure on whether we get them into that class and they start making friends in that class. Of a survey of all Baptist churches in a particular state over a 5-year period, the study was made to see whether converts who were baptized were still in the church 5 years later. And of those thousands of churches, I believe it was 10,000 churches surveyed, of those thousands of churches where the statistical data was collected in those Baptist churches, 86% of the people who were around 5 years later said that one of the main factors in their being around was the fact they had gotten connected in a group within their church early on in their time there. If a person didn't get connected, of all the people that were reached and baptized in those churches, if they failed to connect that person to a small group in their church, there was a 14% likelihood of that person being around 5 years later. 14% isn't strong. 86% is real strong. So there was like a 6 times likelihood that someone would be around 5 years later if they got connected in this group. And by the way, you don't have to be a rocket science to read the book of Acts and figure out that's kind of what was happening back then. They were connected with one another. Letter C. Each class teaches Bible truth for life application. Each class teaches Bible truth for life application. We want every teacher to make sure that they're teaching topics and applying each Bible lesson, regardless of the topic that week, to the people in their age group. So I teach a class for 30-something couples, and a lot of the application that I'm making and a lot of the series that I choose to teach, I'm trying to help couples with principles of parenting and marriage and relationships and their priorities in life, because that's what a lot of them are looking for help on and need help on biblically. Letter D, each class leads people. I'm sorry, I'm not putting these on the screen. I'll try to remember to do that. Each class leads people toward maturity through discipleship and participation in church life. So, Brother Lester knows of the people that have been placed on his roster. He and his team of disciplers and care group leaders are really given the mission of helping all those folks thrive spiritually. Pastor is extremely passionate that our church congregation thrive, but he can't chase that many thousands of people and personally ensure that they thrive. But he can deputize 50-some people who can work with leaders in their classes to try to make sure people aren't slipping through the cracks and people are being discipled and mentored. Something as simple as inviting the men in the class, Mike Lester's class we're using as an example, something as simple as inviting, making sure each of those men in that class get invited to the men and boys camp out where there's going to be great preaching in a few weeks. We know that if someone goes to that camp out, there's a real likelihood that they're going to experience great revival in their heart and draw closer to the Lord. If they don't attend, they've missed an opportunity for that. People attending this conference, same thing. People attending a revival meeting, same thing. Couples attending a couples retreat, same thing. And so our teachers know that they want to work with their group to make sure that every person who's recently been saved and baptized gets discipled, and to make sure that every person in their group is being brought along on the journey that is the Christian life growth journey. And that means coming to the leadership conference and coming to the men's camp out, and for the ladies coming to the retreat, and for the couples coming to the couples retreat, and helping them to come along in their faith. Letter E. Before I move on to letter E, this is like basically making sure that all of your new folks in your church have somebody who's looking out for them. Somebody who's their big brother, big sister, their mentor, their coach, their person who's trying to help them grow toward maturity. We see in the New Testament people doing that for converts in the New Testament. And we see Ananias and then Barnabas doing that for the Apostle Paul, coming alongside of him and putting their arm around him and accepting him into the group and introducing him to the others and discipling him in the faith. Aquila and Priscilla did that. And had people that they mentored in that nature, and that's the role of the teacher and the leaders in the class. Letter E, at Evangelistic Sunday School, letter E, each class develops new leaders by providing opportunities to serve others. People at Lancaster Baptist often will find their first steps at serving other people in the context of their adult class, and that's by design, and that's a good experience for them. If folks don't start serving others at some point in their Christian life journey, their growth is certainly going to plateau. Quickly, number two, understand the nature of effective new classes. Let me tell you, if you get a class launched properly, we'll talk about that under point number four, there are some characteristics that it will typically possess over existing classes. Usually, a new class has more enthusiasm than an established class. More enthusiasm. They're excited about being together. They're excited about reaching their age group. Their teacher's charged up. Nothing is old hat to the teacher or to the leaders in the class. And they've rallied together. They've prayed together. They're anticipating it. It's in a smaller scale, like a church plant or something of that nature. These folks are excited. There's an enthusiasm. When visitors come, they're stoked. They remember their class during the course of the week and so forth. Letter B. Usually, in a newer class, it's less intimidating than an established class. When new people come into our classes, they're easily intimidated. You and I are like that as well. If we go to a new place, people that are new to this conference, who don't know their way around, are a little more intimidated than the ones who've been around three or four or five times, because they're not sure where this building is or that building is or how things are going to go. And people in our classes are like that. And the longer our classes exist and the longer people sit in our classes, this is human nature, the more inward focused they become. And what I always dread is when, and this is the class I teach in right here on Sundays, is when we've got a class filled with people and they're fellowshipping and talking and eating their donut and drinking their coffee and catching up with their friend, and a new person walks in and that new person doesn't get welcomed in any of those clusters of people that are talking, and all they see are people's backs that are already in their existing huddles. And I always try to make sure, and I've tried to train our leaders in our class to make sure that we look for that and that we try to include them in. And a new class, though, is less intimidating. A new class, in my class, I started teaching my class 15 years ago. And in my class, people come in and they might ask someone, you know, how long they've been coming to the class, and they might say 15 years, and they've been here for a week. And then someone else might have been here for 8 years, and someone else 10 years, and that can intimidate someone. But in a new class, they're like, man, we just started, and we're all new, and that immediately welcomes someone in. Next, letter C. New classes tend to have greater involvement than an established class. In my class, because I've taught it 15 years, I have the same human nature you have, and I tend, like you do and like other people do, to rely on some of the same people to do some of the same things over time. And what happens then is newer people don't feel needed. But in a new class, they know that they need somebody to brew the coffee, and they need someone to open the room, and they need someone to empty the trash, and they need someone to bring the donuts, and they need someone to look after refreshments and plan the next activity. And there's a great absence of helping hands, and so new people quickly get involved. Letter D. New classes tend to be more caring than established classes. I'm kind of beating up people who've been faithful right now because they've been around and they've been faithful, but sometimes they have, their plate is full. I read another book where a guy likened people to Legos, and a Lego has a certain number of connection points, and kind of the standard Lego block has the 8 connection points, 2 rows of 4, right? That's kind of your standard Lego block. And once you use up each of those connection points, that Lego block has been connected to as many as it can be connected to. And he says people are like Lego blocks. Now, some people are like a 1 connection point Lego block. They just don't have room in their life and on their plate and in their heart for more than just a few friends or one. Other people are like a big long Lego block, and they have several. But the point is, everybody has a fixed quantity. And what happens is most of the people in my class are maxed out on their relationships. They've met about as many people as they're going to meet. They've welcomed into their life about as many people as they're going to welcome. And they have a full plate. But in a new class with new people, all of a sudden there are these empty connection points, and people can make friends. That's why starting new classes gives a great, it shakes things up, and it gets some people that maybe have been in the church for a while to leave their comfort zone and get in a new class and free up some connection points in their life, and then bring some new people in who are looking for somebody to connect with, and then everybody wins. It's more caring than an established class. Letter E. Newer classes tend to have a greater commitment than established classes. There's so much communication and so much relationship dynamic happening. There's this level of commitment where they know that people in the class are going to be looking for me, and if I'm going to go out of town, I better let the teacher know, and we're going to help somebody move this weekend, and we're going to help somebody paint their house next weekend, and we're going to go soul winning as a class on this weekend and have a class activity that weekend. And there's a camaraderie and a commitment to one another and to the things of God and to the mission of the class, which was point number one, than in an established class. It's just atrophy happens. The second law of thermodynamics happens. And basically human nature happens in existing classes. And we have to take those 5 values I taught in the first point, and we have to constantly remind the folks of them. But in a new class, people are more committed to those because it's new and it's exciting. Letter F. Most new classes tend to have better outreach than established classes, because they've been praying together and meeting together in these formative weeks getting started where they said, now our class, folks, has been deputized to reach 20-something singles in our community for the Lord. We need to pray for 20-something singles. When we see 20-something singles at the grocery store or at the gas station, we need to give them an invite to our class, and we need to think about who do we know at work in our group and in our age group, and we can invite them to our class, and let's put them on a prayer list, and let's reach them. And a lot of times, there's this spirit of, we've been deputized to reach this age group, so let's do it. Plus, the newer people in the class, they actually know more lost people than the more established people. The people in my class that have been around 12 and 15 years, most of their friends are saved. And most of the people that they could reach at work, they have reached at work and on their neighborhood and their street. But people in a new class and people that are new members, oftentimes they know more unchurched or unreached or unsaved people. Those are some benefits and some characteristics of the new classes. Next, I want to mention that you should identify some type of expandable departmental structure. And I've given you in your notes, I think, our 11 adult departments. You don't need to worry about whether that's the same 11 that you would have or whether you would have 3 departments. You could have a singles department, a marrieds department, and a empty nesters and up department. You would call that mature, okay, or you know, something like that. So you don't have, this is not given so that you say, well, how could I have 11 departments or even 11 classes? That's not the point. I just want you to see kind of the way we think about how to break it down. Years ago, we established a ladies' department because of the demographics in our community. And we have a good percentage of single moms in the Antelope Valley, a high percentage like a lot of your communities would as well. Many of our communities have far more 20-something and 30-something singles than they did a generation ago. And sometimes the churches have failed to realize that they need to reach those groups. And young couples classes, I think, are a big part of our strategy and a big part of many of your strategies. But a lot of times, 20s and 30s singles, are, and even up into 40s, are groups that we're forgetting that there are larger percentages of people in those categories today than there were a half a generation ago even, and we're needing to reach them. So by having a departmental structure of some kind, that gives you a skeleton to work off of. And it might be that you're going to have three classes in your church, a singles, a marrieds, and a seniors, or something of that nature. And then from the marrieds class, 18 months later, you split it in half, or you send some people from the class to start a new class, and now you're going to have a young couples class and the marrieds class. And you have this departmental structure or this class structure, and then you just start breaking it up over the years as you start more classes, and it'll develop that way. When I got to Lancaster, the church was already running about 2,500 people, and so it was a wonderful, great church then already. I think we had 10 adult classes in four departments, or maybe five departments. And we've started about 40-some classes since then and have had to establish the departmental structure. Like back then, we just had one college and career and singles class. And then it became two. And now it's become three departments, with every department having a few classes in it. We had one ladies class when I got here, and now we have four or five ladies classes. There are five ladies classes in one department. And so you're going to just break it up that way as you go. Next, let me talk to you about kind of the practical steps. Carefully prepare for the successful launch of new classes. Here's a timeline for launching new classes. Step number one, prayerfully identify potential new class leaders. These are people that would stand out to you. And these are people that you might have had substitute teach a class before. They might be deacons. They might be new staff members. They might be new volunteers that are itching to get involved. Obviously, there's a really, really strong set of criteria that would qualify a person to become an adult leader. In our church, these are the most influential people in our church. They're more influential than our deacons. Many of them are deacons. They're more influential than anyone in our church as a volunteer. And about half of our teachers are volunteer. About half of them happen to work here. The ones who work here, though, a lot of times what they do is, as far as their class on Sunday, isn't what they do during the week. Our kindergarten teacher during the week teaches a ladies' class on Sunday. So her class is really a volunteer thing that she does on the weekends, and she teaches kindergartners through the week. Ben Bach teaches a class on the weekends. He's our maintenance supervisor during the week. So it's I want you to get the sense for that. Identify potential new class leaders. These are people that are faithful. They have decent people skills. They are loyal. And they could be trained. The gift of teaching is a plus. I think folks have succeeded as adult leaders that did not necessarily have the gift of teaching. We gave you five priorities of the class or values of the class. Only one of them was teaching. I've had people that were average teachers who did really well in the other areas that excelled. So these are people that, again, I think loyalty, faithfulness, both in church and in their personal walk, loyalty, faithfulness, and teachability probably are the most three important characteristics of these people. And if they're teachable, then you can train them with some organizational stuff and with some enrollment and with teaching a lesson and so forth. You're going to do this 3 or 4 months before that you start the classes or start the class. You want to approve these people with the pastor. If you're not the pastor, you want to approve these people with the pastor before you ask them to pray and think about it. You're going to really set you and your pastor up and that person up for frustration if you ask them, I'd like to consider you to teach a class, and then you tell the pastor that you asked them that, and he says, I'm not interested in them teaching a class because maybe I'm aware of something that they struggle with that you're not aware of, or because I have an expectation that they don't meet that you didn't think about. And then all of a sudden everybody's frustrated. So approve them with the pastor in advance, then ask them to pray about it, think about it, share a job description with them. I meant to bring some cards here, but my email address is tim.christison@lancasterbaptist.org. If you email me, I'll send you our adult teacher job description if you didn't already get it from Brother Rule or someone. Letter B, interview those potential class leaders. When you interview them, you're going to let them know. Now most folks feel unworthy, especially if they've been in the church for a while, and that's a good sign, by the way. And some of them maybe shouldn't teach, and they are going to share a reason why maybe they shouldn't teach with you. They're just too busy, or they have some struggle that you weren't aware of. But some of them should be challenged and encouraged to do it. And they need to be stretched, and they need to be encouraged with some prayer and some godly encouragement. They need to know that you're going to walk them through this. You're going to train them. You're going to answer their questions. They're not going to be in the deep end of the pool to drown without any help from you. You're going to interview them. You're going to explain to them what's required. Letter C. Once they've said, yes, I will be a new teacher, then you want to train those new teachers. Train the new class leaders. We started a couple years ago, we started like 10 classes on one Sunday. I think it was the Sunday after Easter, a couple Easters ago. And I met with those teachers for 10 Sunday nights or 8 Sunday nights before they started their classes and taught them on these 7 topics here. Are these in your notes?
Yes.
Fulfilling their role, and then that session we just went over their job description. Number 2, developing other leaders in the class. Number 3, making the most of the weekly class time. I took the 60 minutes of our Sunday school hour and I tried to divide it up with them as to an order of class and how to spend time on various things. Number 4, teaching the Bible to change lives, some practical instruction on teaching. Number 5, reaching people. Number 6, practicing enrollment. Number 7, conducting activities. So those are some training topics, and you might think of other topics you would cover. Letter D. This is an important part of our component because some of you have probably had this question in your mind. What do we do? Do we give them an empty classroom? Do we split a class in half? And the answer is we don't do either of those two things. Okay? Here's what we do. Letter D. Prayerfully identify potential new class pioneer members. 6 to 8 weeks before the class starts, look at the rosters of other classes. Now, for some of your teachers, this is sacred ground. They're a little bit possessive of their members of their little flock, and they need to get over that immediately. Okay, the pastor is the shepherd, the under-shepherd, under the chief shepherd, the Lord Jesus Christ. The other teachers need to understand that they are a part of a team. And if someone in their class can rise up and be used to either teach a new class or to help pioneer a new class, that's the spiritual and biblical thing to allow them to do. If you're the adult Sunday school director, you're going to want to look at the rosters and you're going to want to look for people in those groups. I would encourage you to look for them and get input from those teachers. I do want to respect the teachers and say, hey, Brother So-and-so, I was looking at your roster. We're trying to start some new classes in this age group, and here are some people on your roster that I think maybe are chomping at the bit to be more involved. Maybe they could help pioneer a new class. They could offer some energy. Your class will go down a little bit in attendance if these few couples leave your class to help start a new class, but you'll bounce back. And what I've seen in our classes, by the way, over the years is a guy will be plateauing at 50 or 60 in his class, and then his class will go down, my class included. His class will help start other classes, and his class will go down from 60 to 40, and then all of a sudden, what do you know, a couple years later, his class is back up to 60 again. And that's because of kind of the Lego block analogy and the fact that we all have a capacity. And if someone's plateaued, you're actually going to help them reach more people if you siphon out some of the ones that can go be pioneers in a positive sense. Otherwise, he's just going to stay at 60. And as he adds people, he's going to let other people slip through the cracks and they're going to fizzle out. How much better to send 10 or 12 folks away to another class to help start? And they're still here in the church. We're still friends. We're still fellow members. And now all of a sudden, I'm able to reach some more because my capacity has been opened up. And that works well in my experience. And that letter E. Meet with and invite those pioneer members to help launch new classes. When we were starting 10 classes in one weekend, we identified, you know, anywhere from 5 to 10 or maybe 4 to 8 pioneer members for those classes each. And then we invited those 60 or 70 people to a meeting like in a room like this. And we basically said to the folks, when we called them or emailed them, we said, we'd like to invite you to a meeting to be informed of a new ministry opportunity for you in the adult ministry. And it has to do with some things we're trying to accomplish this fall in our outreach and with our Sunday school. And we want to talk to you about a way we think maybe you'd be interested in being involved. And we invited people that we thought there was a high likelihood they would accept the challenge. And we met with them. We went over those five functions, and Pastor Chapel and I connected the meeting together, and we basically called on those people to ask them if they were up to the challenge of leaving their existing class, stretching out a little bit, and helping these new teachers. By that time, we'd already identified the new 10 teachers, so we would tell each person when they came in the room, here's a little bit of information. We're starting a new class with this age for this age group. You fall in that age group, and here's the new teacher. It's going to start on this date. And this meeting is to ask you to consider helping be a pioneer member in their class. So we explained that, spent 45 minutes with them, answered some questions, and then they told us yes or no. And like 80% of them said yes, and they've done well. Next, letter F. Now that you've identified the leaders and you've started to train the leaders, and now that you've identified some pioneers for their classes, you're going to introduce the new classes and leaders to the congregation. I would suggest doing this 3 weeks before the class starts. Whenever we do new stuff, this is a side note, whenever we do new things around here, like change our service schedule or something of that nature, we always try to share it with the most committed group first and get them on board and then share it with a larger audience. So let's just say we were going to change a service schedule. Or we were going to make some major shift like that. We'll share it with the staff and deacons first, after a lot of discussion among the pastoral staff. Then we'll share it with like the Sunday night crowd. And then we'll share it with the Sunday morning crowd. Every time you move out a layer, and you can think of other layers, sometimes we'll share it with the pastoral staff, and then all the staff, and then the staff and deacons, and then the staff and deacons and Sunday school teachers, and then the Sunday night crowd, and then the Sunday morning crowd. And as you move out into those circles, two things happen. Number one, you field good questions, and some questions you hadn't thought of get answered. So and you address them and solve them, and so now the vision is better at each layer. Secondly, three things happen. Secondly, just some obstinate people surface that have questions that are kind of dumb, and you figure out your really good response. So you answer that question before people have an opportunity to ask it the next layer, okay? So when you stand up to introduce it to the whole crew of Sunday school workers or the Sunday night church, some of the questions that surfaced in the earlier groups that you don't want them to resist or to question, you're giving them some real good stuff to chew on to know that that's been thought of. And then the third thing that happens is people have bought in. And when the pastor or the leader conveys it to the next group, a portion of that group is already on board and kind of saying amen and staying positive and not gasping and panicking because of something new, okay? I think that principle applies in building programs and hiring staff and a lot of things like that. Next. Well, let me talk about introducing them. I want to give you these four subpoints. This, I think, is really key, these four things. When you advertise these new classes, do these four things. And by the way, this brochure is basically what we would use to advertise the new classes. And sometimes we will do a brochure like this, and we will highlight which ones are new. This, when we printed this one, there weren't any new ones that time around, but we will highlight, yeah, this is a brand new class or something of that nature. And so we give people the stage of life or the age group of the class. Secondly, we give them the topic of study. We say this new class is going to be teaching, basics, Bible basics for marriage. This class is going to be teaching Bible basics for parenting, or whatever the title is for that session that they're going to teach or that curriculum they're going to teach. And what's really neat is people in the crowd and in the audience are going, oh, that might help us. And sometimes people jump around and join a new class because they heard about that. Number three, the name of the class leader. I think it would be appropriate if you're starting a few classes on a particular Sunday, three Sundays before, bring those three teachers up to the platform and have a word of prayer with them and tell the church about it then. But the stage of life, the topic of study, the name of the teacher, and the name of the class. And I should have said the location of the class as well. Where's it going to meet? What's going to happen is people that you didn't know would have wanted to jump in these classes are going to now surface, and they're going to want to come to the new class that's starting because of any variety of reasons. It might be because they're teaching a topic that they're interested in getting some help on. Somebody's teaching on biblical financial stewardship, and this person's really been struggling in that area, and they're going to say, oh, I want to go to that class because I need teaching on that topic. We have that happen all the time here, those kinds of things. Some of them are going to say, I want to jump into a new class just because maybe my existing class, I feel a little stale, or I feel a little like maybe I need growth. Some are just kind of pioneering at heart, and they want to help start something. Letter G, pre-enroll members into the new classes during a Sunday morning worship service. So this morning you got, this afternoon you got this brochure and you got this enrollment card. So what we did is we stuffed this like this in every bulletin on a Sunday morning. And we said, okay, these classes are starting 2 weeks from today. We want to ask you today to pre-enroll for these classes. Go ahead and fill this out. If you're going to stay in your existing class, that's fine. You can fill one of these out, or if you don't, we're going to assume that you are staying in your existing class. But many of you in this room, either you don't go to a class yet, and you need to. This is a good time to give a sales pitch on why it's so important to be in a class. Maybe even preach an entire sermon on it from Acts chapter 2, verses 41 through 47, something like that. Many of you should enroll in a class today, and you should make a resolution. The new year is a good time to do this. Spring season is a good time to do this. Fall season is a good time to do this. Many of you should jump on board and get into a class, and you're going to be surprised how much you're going to grow and how thankful you're going to be that you became a part of an adult Bible class here at Lancaster Baptist Church. They'll turn them in. Some of you may want to switch classes because you're interested in a new topic or something of that nature. Next, conduct pre-launch fellowships with the pioneer and the pre-enrolled members for the purpose of bonding and job assignments. So let's just say Brother Smith is going to start a new class in a few weeks, and let's just say his new class is going to start on Sunday, April 1st. Okay? It's going to be announced in church the two Sundays before that, in the Sunday morning worship service, and people are going to pre-enroll. Before that, we were identifying pioneer members for the class. So now we have four or five or six pioneer members. We have four or five or six people that pre-enrolled. He's going to invite those dozen people to a barbecue in his backyard or to a restaurant or to a classroom that he reserves at the church to have refreshments on a Sunday night or a Wednesday night or a Saturday afternoon or a Friday night barbecue. And he's going to have a fellowship with that dozen group of people and get to know them and have a time of prayer in preparation for the Sunday launch of the class. Okay? Finally, and then we'll take some questions. Let me give you some additional strategies for success in launching new classes. Create care groups once a class gets to 25. That would be 25 on the roll. you could go up to 30 or 35 on the roll probably without needing care groups. But once you get past about 30-ish, you need care groups, or you need to start new classes out of that class, one or the other. Secondly, and we obviously don't have time to talk about care groups, but I can give you a job description on that as well, too, if you'd like it. Letter B, conduct ongoing monthly class leaders meetings for all adult teachers. We used to have weekly teachers meetings, and a few years ago, we actually made a good move to monthly teachers meetings. We meet in this room once a month on Sunday afternoon before the evening service. It works pretty good. We've got choir practice during that time as well. The few teachers that we have that sing in choir, we just decided that it's okay for them to miss choir practice 25% of the time because they're an adult teacher and the job is that important. And there's child care on campus because of choir practice, and they know that the meeting is going to be a certain length of time, and we meet an hour before church, and we usually meet for about 35 or 40 minutes, so they have 15, 20 minutes after the meeting to get ready for evening service. Having those meetings and a new teacher knowing that those meetings are going to happen is really a big help to them because they know they're going to get ongoing training. And a lot of times folks are overwhelmed by the thought of doing this great task of teaching an adult Sunday school class and knowing that we're going to meet with you every month and in that meeting you're going to be able to ask questions and we're going to help you learn the ropes. That helps. Next. Letter C was cultivate a team of apprentice teachers who can move up through the ranks. You might identify who the next teachers are going to be a year from now and get them to substitute teach when some teachers are on vacation or something of that nature. Make them an assistant teacher. Next, make a decision as a team, conclude that growing more classes is as valuable as growing larger classes. And I would say that it's even more valuable. One reason it's more valuable is more leaders are involved, and it's a privilege to lead. But people need to realize, and people need to admit and conclude as a result of really understanding the scriptures and just good common sense, that more classes is better than larger classes. That doesn't mean that a large class isn't wonderful. If classes get large, that's great. That means there's fruitfulness. That's wonderful. But that larger class needs to not be selfish and stingy with their members. They need to know that if my class dips a bit so that more classes can start and more people can be teaching the Word of God, then that's a good thing. One author I read used the analogy of a sheep herder versus a rancher. A sheep herder kind of keeps track of the sheep. As a shepherd, they would kind of keep track of all of the sheep and every night bring them all into the fold. A rancher, on the other hand, has become a large enough outfit that he has a number of sheep herders working with him, and so he can actually have much larger flocks than any one sheep herder could have by themselves because he has many sheep herders working with him. That's really the idea here, is that the pastor, if the pastor's making all the visits and doing all the follow-up and providing all the nurturing and all the discipleship, that's going to be wonderful when the church is planted or when the church is young and new, but he's going to have a capacity. It might be 90, it might be 190. It's probably not going to be much higher than that. And until he allows himself to take some time and energy into investing in others and raise up some other shepherds within the body, he's going to limit his ability to reach more people. And we know that's not what God wants. Next, when you're looking for pioneer members, look for them in larger classes and classes with a wider age span and in existing age groups. Let me tell you why I say that. Existing care groups, excuse me. In larger classes, sometimes people aren't getting the nurture and the care that they should get. Larger teachers, as gifted as they might be in soul winning and so forth and in teaching, they sometimes aren't able to visit their members as much as a smaller class teacher is. Now, don't get me wrong. They build a large class because they have some gifts that God's using. But that doesn't mean that it needs to just stay that way. They could share people. And that's going to be God's blessing in their life to have been involved in that. A wider age span. Sometimes you'll have a class and it's got couples. It's a couples class. And it's got couples that are 18 and couples that are 78. And the person goes, well, I teach a couples class. But what you need to do is look at the rosters of those classes that have a wide age span, and maybe you're going to find there's a cluster of younger couples there that can start a young couples class. And look in those classes. And then look at existing care groups. Sometimes you'll have a large class, you'll have a number of care groups. You'll have a care group leader that's a really good care group leader who's a good prospect to be a teacher. Let them take their care group and start a class as a new class. Letter F. I think this is an important component in the strategy. Conduct quarterly enrollment campaigns where people may re-enlist or move classes. This brochure was a Sunday when we were not starting new classes, but we were doing a re-enrollment campaign. This brochure is, I think, one version outdated, the one I have here. But the brochure we put together in April of this year, which I think we must have ran out of, actually listed what every teacher is teaching that quarter. And that was a blessing to have that and to put it into people's hands. What we do is we want to, about every quarter, we want to hit a reset in the adult Sunday school. We want to say, and by the way, 90% of the people that go to classes stay in the same class. But we want to go on record to tell everyone in the church, we want to make sure everyone has a class. A lot of you aren't in a class yet. We hope you'll start a class next Sunday or the Sunday after, whenever these classes start. And then secondly, if you're wanting to switch classes or wanting to study something that appeals to you on this list of classes that are your option, let's do that in preparation for this next Sunday. That would be an enrollment campaign. And you could go after all the people that you know attend your church or don't go to class. You could actually make a list of them and send people to visit them. Someone could show up on someone's doorstep and say, I'm John Smith, and I teach the class for 30-somethings at the church, and I'm sure we've met each other at church before, but the church office encouraged me to come by because they thought maybe you'd be interested in coming to a class like the one I teach. And that gets people. Some people say that their Sunday school attendance is anemically proportioned to their worship attendance. What I'm telling you right now is how to fix that. And what you know is that if you do these enrollment campaigns and you increase that percentage, what you're doing based on the statistic I gave you earlier is that you're increasing the likelihood of those folks sticking around. Okay, and then finally, letter G, create an opportunity for members to select classes from a variety of biblical themes and topics. I'll tell you how we do it here. Because we have a theme every year that kicks off on January 1st, we usually teach a unified curriculum the first quarter of the year. Every class taught a 13-week series called Launch Out this year, January, February, March. And then, in preparation for the enrollment campaign that was conducted in late March in preparation for April, we let every teacher work with Brother Rule to choose what they wanted to teach in their class. And we gave them a list of over 100 titles that they could choose from, all of the Striving Together titles, plus a whole bunch of other stuff that we've used in the past that's sound. And some of the teachers, they're gifted enough Bible students that they could write their own study on some topic. And Brother Rule would create a list in February or March and work with every teacher on what are they going to teach. And then in late March, it's advertised to the church. And so one quarter, we're teaching all the same. The next quarter, we're all teaching different. There might be several couples classes teaching on marriage. There might be several couples classes teaching on parenting. A ladies' class might teach on parenting, while another ladies' class might teach through the book of Philippians. And it's all listed out, and folks have an opportunity to choose. I wanted to give you a quick plug for our curriculum. The three curriculum titles that I have were all written for our church over the last few years. Several years, really. One year, our theme was For the Faith, for example, and I wrote this curriculum back then for our church, and then it was published a year later. And lesson one was introductory. Lessons 2 through 7 was on 6 components of our faith, and then lessons 8 through 13 were on the application of those components of our faith. One year, our theme was Making a Difference, and I wrote 13 lessons on how the believers in Acts made a difference in their generation, and took 13 biblical stories out of Acts and talked about how that those folks made a difference those 13 ways. 2 years ago, I wrote this curriculum, Striving Together. It's new this week, actually, and it is on 13 ways Christians are instructed to work together in the New Testament. And so a lot of these passages even have that word together or one another in them. And it talks about striving together in ministry and at home and in revival and in relationships and in prayer and in unity and forgiveness and confidence in God, in generosity, and so forth. You'll notice I happened to bring the three that I wrote, okay? mine aren't the best. Pastors are probably the best, but mine are the second best, okay? But one of the things I wanted to mention to you is that we use the teacher edition and the student edition, and I wanted to tell you kind of why. If you buy them in quantity, these student editions are pretty inexpensive. I think they are $2 or so. And what I love about providing these to people is it does several things. It lets the class members know we know where we're headed. Number two, it gives them something to remind them during the week to come back. Number three, it gives them something to do during the week. There are review questions and memory verses. Also, it gives them something in the classroom to interact with. The more things people can do while the teaching's taking place, follow along on a PowerPoint, fill in blanks, the more they're going to retain. That's a proven fact, of course. It gives them something to go back and refer to later that they can put on a shelf in their home or on a nightstand in their home, and there's a higher likelihood of what they learn from God's Word will stay with them. It has the scripture references inside. I like it because if I kick off a new series and I have some absentees the first week, I can take this to their homes, the homes of the absentees, in preparation for week number two. Or people that I've been trying to get back in class, I can take it to them before the first week and encourage them to use this as a reset button to get back in class. And it doesn't really cost much to do it. What we do is when we have a new Sunday, when we kick off our new curriculum, we just give all the books away. And then we pass a plate and say, if you want to help offset the cost of your book, put a few dollars in the plate. They cost us a few dollars. And the offering always covers the cost of the book, because a lot of people just put a five in or something like that, okay? So it's not an expensive thing. It also lets people know, by giving them to them and not creating some kind of a, you know, demanding, you know, pay here kind of a thing, it also just sends a message to them that we're wanting to invest resources into you because we want you to thrive spiritually.